You might think of graffiti as a blight on buildings, trains, bathroom stalls, or maybe you see it as a hip urban art form. But in the tiny town of Brandy Station, Virginia, graffiti is history. It sends messages from the Civil War. Robert Luddy heads the Brandy Station Foundation, which is trying to restore the Graffiti House. He leads me inside the old red clapboard house, upstairs to a bright, sunny room. This room is got these big plank, old wood floors, big, almost floor-to-ceiling windows in the rooms are just gorgeous, and the paint is chipped away on the walls, on some of the walls, and there's this graffiti, but it's much bigger than I would have expected. I mean, the letters are a foot high in some,
cases, yes. And so what you're looking at on the walls is a series of signatures, names, drawings, just expressions by the soldiers as they walk through.
The mottled gray paint and whitewash has been chipped back, revealing scrawls and sketches made from fireplace coal. It's not fine art, more like the 19th century version of George Was Here. But there is folk art, a picture of a horse, its ears perked up, flowing wings of an angel. Part of the wall has been destroyed, and so the rest of the picture is lost. And then there are women.
Let's look at this lady on the wall over here. There's a picture of a woman with a big dress on, if I can make it out correctly. It looks like she has a 2-inch waist. She's really cinched in at the waist, as was the style.
That's absolutely right. She is crossing over a plank. She doesn't want to get her dress dirty, so she takes her hands. She pulls up on her skirt, showing us high-top shoes, shins, petticoats will be down through here. Now, what's more important even for us is she leaves us a message.
What does it say?
The whole message reads, "I am turned over to Lieutenant Gale." And we've come to the conclusion that the right Gale is Lyman Gale of the 10th Vermont Infantry, whose unit camped literally across the road here in that vacant field outside the house during the winter encampment here. And so we think Lyman was the right guy.
Luddy takes the clues he gets from the walls and tries to piece together the history of this house. Before the winter encampment of Union soldiers, it had been a Confederate field hospital. The house was also at the center of one of the biggest cavalry battles of the Civil War, the Battle of Brandy Station. And so the graffiti scrawled across the walls comes from both sides. But it's hard to recreate the exact history, not just because records are spotty and the references sometimes oblique, but because the walls themselves are falling to pieces in places. Cracks spider across, meeting others, breaking some walls into large chunks held up only by horsehair. That's right, horsehair. This house has a skeleton of wooden laths slathered with a plaster that's mixed with horsehair as a thickener. Now the hair is the only thing holding the wall together in some places. And there is the daily traffic of commuter and heavy freight trains out back that send tremors through the house, Luddy says.
It's almost like its own mini version of tectonic plates. They move back and forth across one another with the vibrations from the train. And as they move and they rub, then the plaster breaks down and you wind up with the white dust that just falls to the floor.
It's just dust.
This makes the job of uncovering the house's hidden messages all the more delicate. And that job belongs to Kirsten Travers. She's a restoration and paint removal specialist hired in the summer to test ways of removing the multiple layers that cover the historic graffiti. Before Kirsten can even start in an area of this room, she has to test the wall's strength.
Tell me what you're doing when you tap the wall.
Well, I lay my left palm flat on the wall, and then with my two fingers on my right hand, I tap the wall around my left hand.
What do you hear there?
I hear a few different variations of thudding sounds, but what I feel is what is more important to me. I can actually feel how the vibration travels up and down the crack here. And that's really what's happening when every train goes by. the vibrations. They're just traveling all over the wall, traveling through each crack. And, you know, the wall's really losing adhesion little bit by little bit every time a train goes by.
Kirsten Travers, you're still uncovering graffiti in here. I mean, there are big parts of the walls where there's that old gray mottled paint that, mm-hmm. that you're taking off.
I'm working up in this corner, upper corner of this plaster wall, and there's about 2 square feet of whitewash and paint that are still covering the graffiti. The rest of the surrounding area has already been exposed, so there's bare plaster, and on top of it is graffiti paint drawn in charcoal and pencil. And what you can see around the area that I'm going to work on is the letters R-E-G-T, which is regiment, N-Y-E, which is New York Engineers,
I think so.
Pontoon Train, and Bob believes I'm going to find the number 50.
Bob hopes.
Well, why do you think the number 50 is under it?
Well, we know that the 50th New York Engineers were here in Brandy Station, or the Brandy Station area, during the winter of 63 to 64, and we also know they were in charge of the Federal Pontoon Train. We have about a half a dozen pictures downstairs from the Library of Congress's archive of the Civil War showing the campsite and the pontoons of the 50th New York Engineers. So if we could actually have their signature on the wall, that would be super duper. But we will never know until Kirsten gets underneath that paint layer. And who knows? I mean, we may all get surprised here and they turn out to be somebody totally different. But that's part of the adventure of cleaning the walls.
Kirsten Travers drags her stepladder to the corner of the room. She takes a spray bottle and mists the walls to loosen the top layer of paint.
You just take a straight-edged razor blade and applying a certain pressure, I'm able to get just underneath the whitewash layer that's covering the graffiti, and I'm able to pop it off. And there looks like there's a number emerging.
Oh, it's a 5, just like we were expecting. Okay, we haven't seen a 0 so far.
No, but there's something. Let's see what these marks are going to bring us to.
Just stand here and watch this. It's like
that's what people do when visitors come to the house when I'm working. It's like I look behind me and there's this crowd of people watching. But I just get into this zone because my face is 6 inches away from a wall all day.
I mean, I'm just standing here with my jaw open, sort of like watching this history be uncovered for the first time.
Yeah, so we're all the first people to see this in
143 years. Is it a 1? Is it the 15th?
It might be a 1.
Century?
It looks like it.
Could be a 1, could be a
looks
7.
Like it ends.
Oh, that's true.
It could be a 7, but it looks more like a 1 to me.
Well, every day you learn something new.
Okay, so.
Well, now we'll
15th Regiment.
So now for more pictures.
They expected to find the 50th Regiment, and they found the 15th. But that's no disappointment for Bob Luddy. It's just the next clue in a historical treasure hunt. It's what makes working here, Travers and Luddy both say, so exciting.
It seems like as you, Kirsten Travers, are reconstructing what was written on these walls, you, Bob Luddy, are reconstructing the history.
Absolutely true. Absolutely true. This house has a history all by itself. And this house deserves to be more than just a museum composed of dead things of a bygone age. This house is really a living being in and of itself.
A living time machine, Luddy says, that transports you into the lives and thoughts of American soldiers, North and South. And the scrawls on the walls of this graffiti house tell a different story from what you'll find in a history book, Luddy says. This is no bronze statue of a commander on a horse. This house gives a glimpse of the foot soldier, the everyman, the rural lady, and especially the young men who fought against each other in America's only Civil War. It seems fitting to have our parting words tonight come from Abraham Lincoln. In his deeply beautiful second inaugural address, Lincoln urged the country, "Let us strive on to finish the work we are in, to bind up the nation's wounds, to care for him who shall have borne the battle, and for his widow and for his orphan, to do all which may achieve and cherish a just and lasting peace among ourselves and with all nations." This is All Things Considered from NPR News.